It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello and welcome to Sunday School Dropouts, the podcast where an ex-Christian and a non-believing sort of Jew read all the way through the Bible for the first time. I'm Nico Bakulich.
And I'm Lauren O'Neill.
And let's get biblical.
Let's do it.
Okay.
First thing you should know is I'm the ex-Christian. I was raised Presbyterian. I'm now an atheist.
And I'm the non-believing sort of Jew. Also, I'm reading the New Revised Standard Version of the Bible.
And I'm reading the New International Version, or NIV, of the Bible. This is not a Christian Bible study podcast.
Yeah, put it down.
Okay, and
just put it down.
It's not appropriate for chillums.
Mm-mm.
And
or
also,
those of weak constitution.
This one, well, this one's going to be like decently misogynistic.
Okay.
So just heads up on
right.
that one.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else we need to talk about?
Well, it's about the way you dress in the workplace. See, this is awkward territory being both your partner and your supervisor.
Uh-huh. How did we get into that arrangement?
I just want to say, the way you dress
seems like a bad idea.
I think it's distracting to some of the men. And what I'd really like to do is just maintain a professional work atmosphere where I can, you know, just
ogle me without anyone else thinking
mm-hmm.
of me.
And you can date your direct superior without anyone
okay,
else
great.
Looking at you or thinking things.
Perfect. I'm really glad we could work out this feminist workplace role.
Mm-hmm.
Today we're talking about the Book of Nahum. I think that's...
It's everybody's favorite. It's the word on everyone's lips.
That's how it is.
We've been getting emails for weeks. Can't wait until you do Nahum. He's my man.
I think that's how it's like pronounced in America. I think the standard thing that you'll hear in church is Nahum.
Okay.
But,
I mean, I won't hear it in church.
Yeah. Kind of like, remember when we had Chris Stroop on and he talked about Ehud?
Okay.
But he said that they learned it Ehud.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the same with Nahum. It's another minor prophet.
Mm-hmm.
We are...
Well, you don't have to call him it. It's he is another minor prophet.
He is another minor prophet.
Or he was. R.I.P. Nahum.
We're mired in the minor prophets. And so, of course, nothing is in chronological order for some reason. So at this point in time, the northern kingdom of Israel has been destroyed by Assyria.
Okay. Which Syria?
You know, one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And
other jokes like that is why you tune in. Accept your punishment, listeners.
SMH, baby. The southern kingdom of Judah has not yet been taken over by Babylon.
Okay.
So we're in between the two exiles.
Mm-hmm.
And Nahum is from a town called Elkosh. He is an Elkoshite.
Okay.
Which is likely the town that is still called Alkosh.
Okay.
Which is in modern day Iraq.
Hmm. Interesting.
And it is apparently now a Christian town and one of the few places in the world that still speaks Aramaic.
Oh.
According to some Catholic propaganda site that was cited on Wikipedia.
Great research, baby.
And this whole book is Nahum's prophecy about the city of Nineveh.
Right.
As you may remember from our Jonah episode, Nineveh was the capital of Assyria.
Mm-hmm. The Assyrian Empire.
Which at this point has destroyed the northern kingdom of Israel.
Okay.
And it is also in what is now modern-day Iraq, just across the river from Mosul,
mm-hmm.
actually. And it is right near Alkosh, which is why that's probably... It's probably referring to that place. And it was actually the biggest city in the world at the time.
Really?
Yes. As you may also remember from our Jonah episode, God sent Jonah to preach to the Ninevites. Jonah didn't want to, et cetera, et cetera. When he finally did, he said the city would be destroyed for its sin in 40 days. But the Ninevites actually repented in one day, which made Jonah mad. And then the story ended with God being like,
but God forgave the Ninevites.
Yeah. And he was like, grow up, Jonah. I care about everyone, including the Ninevites. Well, things are about to change in this little sequel.
My understanding is that since the chronological order is screwed up, there's actually going to be a later book that is also a prophecy on the downfall of Nineveh that happens before this one.
Either way, this is clearly coming after Jonah.
Right.
And Nahum is also foretelling doom for the Ninevites. But this time God is not making him sit under a vine with a worm. Instead, he is...
What was that worm's name? Percy?
Yeah, I think it was Percy.
Percy,
yeah.
The worm, Sullivan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now God's going to destroy the freaking heck out of Nineveh. And this did happen historically. Nineveh was destroyed in 612 BC when all the other nations around it all ganged up. I guess they had all been like conquered by Assyria at some point and they all wanted revenge.
It's a classic story.
So they all ganged up and attacked Nineveh together. And I guess Nahum was just watching it like, yeah.
Watching those chickens come home to roost, if you know what I'm talking about.
So...
He's sad to see him leave. Happy to see him walk away. Right? Something along those lines?
Is that how people watch chickens? Is that how you watch chickens?
If they're going home to roost and the chickens and the roost is away from you, then... We start to talk about chapter one of Nahum.
Okay. Well, chapter one, I don't know if you know this, but the Lord's real powerful.
Mm-hmm.
His ways in the whirlwind and the storm, and clouds are the dust of his feet.
Mm-hmm.
His wrath is poured out like fire. The rocks are shattered before him, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And guess who he's pouring his wrath out on today?
Nineveh?
Fucking Nineveh.
Okay, yes. It's the Assyrians.
Because they worship idols,
mm-hmm.
and also they destroyed Israel. That was kind of God's will anyway, so like, what the fuck is he mad about?
Well, it's interesting that we're now seeing the culmination of this prophecy that has been, we've actually seen before several times.
Yeah.
Whenever anyone would prophesy doom and they were talking about the Assyrian exile as opposed to the Babylonian exile, a key component of it would be at the end where it said, oh, but don't forget that God will come for the conquerors as well.
Yeah.
It's just that he's using them as an instrument now, and then he'll get to them later, I guess.
Yeah. But he never really got to the northern kingdom of Israel because Assyria permanently destroyed it, and the tribes that were living there became known as the Ten Lost Tribes.
Right.
So that didn't exactly work out.
No, but God still did follow up with the destroyers of that kingdom.
That's true. He did, yeah. God can really be relied upon to, like, come through with his promises to destroy.
Mm-hmm.
To rebuild.
It's the rebuilding that...
Not so much.
It's
but the destruction,
through, right?
Yeah, he's got that on lock.
Yeah. Interestingly, that chapter one ends with lines that say, look on the mountains, the feet of one who brings good tidings, who proclaims peace. Celebrate your festivals, O Judah. Fulfill your vows, for never again shall the wicked invade you. They are utterly cut off. And... He's talking to Judah here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which was not the kingdom that was actually destroyed by
Assyrians. But it was their brethren.
Right. So
I mean, even though there had been wars between Israel and Judah.
Yeah.
And also, like, who even knows what their actual brethren were? Like, this is all just reconstructed after the fact.
And this is supposed to be a prophecy that the wicked shall never invade you, Judah. But that's not true, because after the Assyrians are destroyed, the Babylonians will actually invade and destroy
Judah.
That's
true. But the Assyrians never invade Judah.
That's true, but does he consider...
The Assyrians never invade Judah.
That's true. And he does say just the...
The Assyrians never invade Judah.
I was trying to agree with you.
Okay.
God. It says, for never again shall the wicked invade you. But of course, as we remember, God considered the Babylonian king a follower of the true God, like a Messiah type.
He considered the Persian king a Messiah type.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
For overthrowing the Babylonian king.
Yeah. You're right.
So, get it together.
I'm sorry. So in the end, you were wrong. Chapter 2 begins with an exhortation to gird up your loins.
Gird up your loins.
Do you know what that means? Like physically? Do you know what it means to gird one's loins? Gird up one's loins?
I mean, I assume it means to like put on armor to protect one's netherly bits.
In a way it does. I actually looked it up.
Okay.
And I found like a 6-panel little
loin girding instruction.
Mm-hmm, little cartoon about how to gird oneself up. So basically what you do is you grab your tunic. So you have like a free hanging tunic.
Oh, I'm grabbing my tunic already.
Yep. Okay. Well, just cool it. Okay. This is a family podcast. You gather your tunic in the front. Okay.
Okay.
So you gather up all the free stuff and pull it up. This is a free hanging tunic. You're freeballing down there.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not, but.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the hanging gardens of Babylon down there.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
You gather your tunic and then you. Mm-hmm. Tuck it up on in there like a diaper. Like
okay.
you slide all the extra material through your legs
okay.
out the other side. So you got like a diaper under there. Okay. Now you have a big thing of extra fabric in the back.
Okay.
And you split that in half and you grab each end and you pull it around the middle, front side.
Uh-huh.
You pull it back round front wise and then uh-huh. you like give it a real knotting up, you know? Like, you do the old Notting Hill, if you know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
So then you've made yourself
then
like...
Then you've girded your loins.
You've made yourself like a shirt diaper, yeah, and girded up your loins.
Now, there's no armor?
No. I mean, but the thing is...
It's just like an ancient jock strap.
Yeah, pretty much, because if you're freeballing like that...
Uh-huh.
If you're
flipping and flopping.
Yeah, if you're flying with no autopilot, if you know what I'm talking about,
yeah.
then it's difficult to run.
Okay.
For example, when Elijah had to outrun... the chariot of Ahab to get to Jezebel.
Uh-huh.
He girded up his loins.
He girded up his loins.
Because you know he can't run faster than no chariot.
Okay.
When the little prophet is flopping around
okay.
down there.
Okay. So it's like a sports bra.
Yeah, it's like a sports diaper.
But your
made
balls.
Out of a shirt.
Okay. I get it.
You got it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Is that why men wear jock straps? I don't know what a jock strap is.
Then I'm not going to answer that question. Because I don't think you're going to be able to...
To process it?
Use that information wisely.
I mean, I don't even know...
Educate yourself before you question.
Okay. I don't even know
grow
what's going on
grow a dick and strap it
there.
Up, okay?
Okay, fine. Fine. I'll grow a dick and strap it up. We get some good descriptions of the sacking of Nineveh.
Mm-hmm. It's very... I would describe it almost as impressionistic.
Impressionistic.
Yeah, the way that the poet sets the scene. The chariots race madly through the streets. They rush to and fro through the squares. Their appearance is like torches. They dart like lightning. It's a movement and light, and it's a mm-hmm. creates a mm-hmm. a real setting.
Creates a soundscape.
Yeah, like a sound zone. Like we're flying through the sound.
I wrote down, the river gates are thrown open and the palace collapses. It is decreed that Nineveh be exiled and carried away. Her female slaves moan like doves and beat on their breasts. Nineveh is like a pool whose water is draining away. Stop, stop, they cry, but no one turns back. Mm-hmm. Plunder the silver, plunder the gold. The supply is endless. The wealth from all its treasures. She is pillaged, plundered, stripped. Also, after that, it says, like... it has a thing about like the lion. It's like a metaphor about lions.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like an ironic, like sardonic dig
yeah,
on Nineveh.
Yeah, and then it says like the lion killed enough for his cubs and strangled the prey for his mate. No, he didn't.
That's right.
It's the other way around.
I read this and I get upset because I'm like...
The lionesses do the hunting.
Mm-hmm.
The lionesses do the hunting. Do they ever watch any lions? Like it's not like...
That's also my question.
It's not like... 2,000 years ago, it was different, and the lions, unless...
I was thinking, because there used to be European lions a long time ago.
Do you think the lions got feminism in the past 2,000 years?
Maybe.
Do you think there's, like, male lions' rights activists? And they're like, we used to be glorious, we used to do the hunting, now everything is feminized, and women do all the hunting.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with a yeah on that.
That seems plausible, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, likely. Do you know what I also read when
what?
I was looking up lion stuff?
What? You were looking up lion stuff?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit.
Okay.
You know how we do.
Okay.
You know where the mane is for, right?
No.
So the mane has like a survival purpose or like a
fitness purpose. Oh, so people can't bite their neck.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. But it's so other lions can't bite their neck. That's right. Not people. People wouldn't try to bite their neck. That would be foolish.
Unless. No, but it's evolved specifically to help in lion-on-lion action.
Yeah.
And not that kind of action.
Sometimes that kind of
action. Probably a little bit of that, yeah. Cats are gross.
Nature's amazing. Mm-hmm. Back in the old days when lions were lions, mm-hmm. before the lionesses took everything away from them and made them all into cucks.
Well, they are called betas.
What?
The less dominant lions.
Oh, I thought you meant all lions. I thought you meant that like lionesses are considered the alphas.
No.
Oh, okay. But they should be. We're just projecting our stupid human shit onto them, right?
I mean, yeah, but that's what we do. That's what you're doing.
By saying the lions got feminism? No, that was a joke. If actual biologists call the lions alphas, maybe we're just projecting, you know, because the lionesses are the ones that do all the work. So maybe they're actually the alphas.
Maybe they are. We'll never know.
Did you know hyenas? The females are dominant and they have huge clitorises that are like as big as penises.
I did know that.
And also they give birth through the clitoris.
What? I didn't know that.
They give birth through the penis clitoris.
What?
Yeah. Isn't that fucked up?
That's super fucked up.
Anyway, chapter 3.
Hyenas are in the Bible.
Where?
They've shown up a couple times.
Oh, yeah, I think so. I probably talked about their clitorises before.
Probably. You can't shut up about it. Christ.
We're not at Christ yet. Some more gory details of Nineveh's destruction, but now we're going to get real misogynistic with it.
Before we do that, though, there's some more impressionism.
What kind of impressions you got to
give me? You got the crack of whip and rumble of wheel, galloping horse and bounding chariot, flashing sword and glittering spear, piles of dead, heaps of corpses, dead bodies without end, they stumble over the bodies.
Wow. I feel like I skimmed over that part.
I feel like you did. I feel like you are doing a bad job.
It's like pretty bad situation in Nineveh right now. It's like not that fun.
No, it's not funny.
It's not like really very chill. The vibes are like not very chill. I wrote down, I am against you, declares the Lord Almighty. I will lift your skirts over your face. I will show the nations your nakedness and the kingdoms your shame. I will pelt you with filth. I will treat you with contempt and make you a spectacle. A
classic example of the prophet enjoying his job too much here. Projecting all of his gross shit.
Do we have to
filth? Someone made the choice back then to be like, let's get all of this women-hating shit into our religion. Do you think it was just one dude? No. I mean, it was everybody, right?
Pelting filth?
You think that's too specific for everybody?
Yeah,
to
I think
of that?
That's one dude.
That's one dude.
Yeah.
It's just a series of dudes who are really...
Like, yeah. Like working out their own problems. Yeah.
Of which there are many.
It's like, we're not monkeys. We don't need to, you know, like throwing stones is bad enough. Do we need to add insult to injury?
It's a good point.
It's like pretty aggro. I just don't think it's necessary.
I would agree that it's pretty aggro and not chill.
Interestingly,
zero.
There's a slam on Nineveh specifically for being the biggest city in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It says, you've increased the number of your merchants till they are more than the stars of the sky. But like locusts, they strip the land and then fly away.
Mm.
Your guards are like locusts, your officials like swarms of locusts. But when the sun appears, they fly away and no one knows where. So first of all, cool it with the locusts. We get that they're like locusts.
In mine, some are compared to locusts and some to grasshoppers.
Yeah, I actually cut out all the grasshoppers. Like there was even more that I didn't write down.
Mm. Well, you edited it and then... got angry at them for including too many locusts?
Well, what I've included is only a small sampling of the locusts and grasshoppers that they mentioned. Mm-hmm. It's only like half of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's already too much.
Mm-hmm. So you use biased statistics to try and prove...
What my point is that they've become like too modern, right? Like they've got like capitalism, they've got bureaucracy,
mm-hmm.
and God's like, nope, shut it down.
They got population pressure. When everybody comes to the big city from wherever they're from, they can go back to where they're from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the city grew too fast.
I guess.
It's a tale as old as time.
Okay.
And it's a...
People returning to rural areas from urban areas is a tale as old as time?
It's a tale as old as tame.
Hmm. A tame tile, you say?
Mm-hmm. The tamest. Also, in this section, I really enjoy the line, all your fortresses are like fig trees with first ripe figs. If shaken, they fall into the mouth of the eater.
How many of those fig boys are nasty, though?
No, these are fresh figs. This fortress is just packed full of fresh figs. Metaphorical figs, of course.
There's no nasty boys in there.
Well, there are nasty boys in there, but they're not figs.
They're eating the figs.
No, there are no figs. I mean, it's a metaphor.
Oh, it's a metaphor.
The fortress is a fig tree.
The fortress is a fig tree.
And your body is a wonderland.
Okay.
And this is America.
The green light is the American dream.
Mm-hmm.
The ring is the American dream.
The whale is nature. Rosebud is his childhood.
The ship is predestination.
And there are no nasty fig boys in this story.
Do you have anything else to say?
The thing I like about the way this prophecy ends is you don't see too often in the Bible so far the moment when Israel gets to gloat over the over the fall of an enemy.
That's true.
Every once in a while it happens.
Yeah.
But not too often.
Like, happened for a while, like, back in the very beginning when they were, like, conquering Canaan.
But that was a little fraught.
Yeah. I mean, like, it was still definitely fraught.
Because, like, they were doing it because they had no land.
Yeah.
And they were like, we need some.
For sure.
And honestly, even if they were gloating over it, it would be difficult to really get on their side because they
were... Yeah, it was a little weird.
Showing up at other people's houses and wiping them out. But in this case...
It was problematic.
I agree. She's so angry.
I'm steaming mad about problems. These Israelites, they're all theory and no praxis.
Praxis.
Yeah. That's how you say practice if you're fancy.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I want to be a fancy man. But at the end of this, prophecy, they're very happy to see the downfall of their enemies. Your people are scattered on the mountains with no one to gather them. There is no assuaging your hurt. Your wound is mortal. All who hear the news about you clap their hands over you, for who has ever escaped your endless cruelty?
Clap your hands.
Mm-hmm. And so they get to see, they live to see a moment when a longtime enemy is brought low.
What I want to know is, what does this mean about Jonah?
Good question.
Okay, so like to refresh everybody's memory, Jonah said that Nineveh would be destroyed in 40 days because of its wickedness. And instead, all the Ninevites immediately repented. And Jonah still went to the outskirts of the city to watch and wait for their doom to come. And God was like, please chill your nards.
Mm-hmm.
So does this ultimately validate Jonah? Like, because he was right, but the timeline was just a little off?
Mm.
Or does this show how far God will go to troll Jonah? Like, even after his death, like... Oh, you thought you could run away from me? Well, first, you're going to get et by a whale.
Mm-hmm.
Second, your prophecy isn't going to come true.
You're going to pop right out that blowhole.
Third, just kidding, your prophecy is going to come true, but only after you're gone, because I was going to make it come true the whole time. I just didn't want to give you the satisfaction of seeing that, because I wanted you to suffer and think that I love the Ninevites more than my chosen people. I don't love the Ninevites. I hate the Ninevites. I just wanted you specifically to think that so I could mess with you because you tried to disobey me.
Mm.
Do you think which of those options seems more realistic to you?
I mean, it honestly seems more... I mean, is it trolling, really? He's trying to teach Jonah a lesson, like being like, you know, I respect forgiveness among... Jews and non-Jews alike.
Is that really the lesson, though, if he's going to destroy Nineveh later? Or is the lesson, you better fucking obey what I say?
Mm, that's a good point. I mean, it's unclear because Jonah seems so unfinished. You know, there could be the end, that speech could have ended, you know, the one where he asks him, like, don't I care for all people? Like, my job is taking care of all the animals and people in the world. And he says, but don't you think I also have a plan? Like, do you think I would have spared Nineveh now? If I didn't understand what I was doing later, I don't know. I think it validates Jonah.
I think God is trolling him. I think Jonah has to be thrown out now.
Mm. You think so? But I mean, he. But...
No, I think I'd rather throw Nahum out. At least Jonah was a good story.
Yeah. On that subject, that is throwing things out. we're going to toss out the last half hour of recording.
Okay.
And start back and over fresh.
Start fresh. Mm-hmm. I'll do it good this time.
Yep. This is all scratch. So we'll see you when we come back from break. There's going to be a special quiz, and we're going to keep talking about Nahum for the first time, of course.
Is there more wine?
Of course, this is scratch, so I'm happy to answer your non-show related questions on mic. Yes, there is a little bit more.
Oh, thank God.
Okay, we're going to see you in about a minute, so just listen to some music, and then it's going to start all over from scratch, and we're certainly not going to keep any of this. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. Sunday School Dropout.
Thank you.
I'm Lauren.
And I'm Nico.
And we are talking about the book of Nahum or Nahum.
Yeah, now we have dispensed with the scriptural portion of the show.
Yeah, we already finished all the text because it was only a couple pages long. And now we need something to finish the rest of the episode.
Yeah.
So first, we're going to check in with the Skateboard Scorpion Bible, which I think we've pretty much decided is a Skateboard Crab Bible.
You sound so upset.
Why is it a crab?
Well, I mean, the crab is cancer, right?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't help at all.
Mm-mm. It only makes it worse.
Scorpion would be Scorpio, of course. You know, this...
The stars can't help us now. Astrology has proved useless.
Still not? Is there any hope if the stars can't help us?
I believe that a call-out from the Boy's Bible, your ultimate manual, can show us the way in the darkness.
Speaking of astronomy.
Astrology.
Well, you'll see.
Okay.
This call-out is called Back to the Black Hole.
All right.
So it's about approaching an event horizon. My God, it's full of stars, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, you got like stretched out or something.
Mm-hmm. You like pluck out your own eyeballs?
Yeah, you probably like trial through time.
Get to hang out with Sam Neill, though.
Oh, sweet.
I'm sure he's very charming in person. The Assyrians were notoriously cruel, says the Boy's Bible.
True.
They were so wicked that if you could go back in time and video them in action, your footage wouldn't be allowed on public television.
Whoa.
Public television?
Actually, that sounds like a pretty good PBS documentary.
Yeah. Time traveling? Yeah. I mean, that's
to Assyria?
That's like, a hot story.
Yeah.
God loved them enough to warn them, but Nineveh, Assyria's capital, had its last chance with Jonah. They temporarily repented, but pretty soon they went back to the black hole they'd been in. By Nahum's day, there was no more Jonah. ... Just judgment.
Okay.
Nahum gave prophecies of exactly how Nineveh would fall, with a flood that opened the walls for an attacking enemy. And that's how it happened.
That's what my Bible scholarly notes also said.
There
was a real flood.
My scholarly notes said that the fortress and city was likely destroyed by a fire.
It was a flood. It says that in other texts.
So shut up. If you've mucked up.
Flood. Mucked up?
Mm-hmm. Repent like Nineveh did, yes. But then go on from there and make a commitment to change your life. Repentance is just the first step. The rest is showing proof of the repentance and changing your life around. Back to the black hole.
So you're telling me that even though I dress my goat in sackcloth, mm-hmm. it might not be enough.
Well, it's not about what that goat does on that day, okay? It's about what you teach that goat.
So just dress all goats in sackcloth forever?
No.
Oh.
If you dress a goat, he'll be forgiven today.
Okay.
But if you teach a goat to dress himself, he'll be forgiven forever.
Oh, okay.
Think about that.
Does putting him on a skateboard help?
It might.
Okay.
if he's got somewhere to be.
Okay.
As long as he's wearing a helmet.
Oh, yeah, that's important.
Don't want your goat to get a ticket.
No.
Dress your goats in corduroy and denim.
Done and done. We also have a quiz to pad this episode out.
Don't call it padding when it so obviously is. Because what we're doing is we're having fun. Bible time. Everybody talk bibble and get down tonight. Okay?
Everybody babble about bibble.
Mm-hmm. We bibble about babble all the different ways.
Okay. Are you ready for your quiz?
Should I gird my loins?
I don't think you're going to have to do a lot of running. Can you gird your mind's loins?
My mind loins. The loins of my mind. Yes,
I can.
What do you
got on your mind grapes?
Okay. So here's what I'm doing with my mind. I am grabbing my brain tunic. I'm bunching up the front of my brain tunic.
Go on.
Pulling it all up, like off of my brain legs. And then I'm tucking that right up on.
Okay, enough.
I'm back.
Question number one. Talking about the Book of Nahum.
Do I need graph paper or anything? Can I use a calculator?
You can use a calculator. It won't help you.
Can I play Snake?
We're talking about Solid Snake?
Metal Gear.
Snake! We're talking about the fucking Book of Nahum.
Okay.
Nahum is sometimes abbreviated as NA. NA is also the abbreviation for the element sodium.
Okay.
Although sodium is the sixth most common element, it does not occur on its own in nature. It's only found in compounds.
Okay.
Who was the first person to isolate sodium?
Ooh, okay.
A. Humbert III, Count of Savoy. B. Sir Humphrey Davy. Or C. Lord Milton Humberstone.
A couple of Humbros, huh? Mm-hmm.
Nahum, get it?
Oh, my. You're doing great. N-A-H-U-M.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with Count Fancy Pants.
There were like three Count Fancy Pants.
the fellow from Savoy.
Savoy.
Yeah.
Incorrect.
Okay.
The correct answer is Sir Humphrey Davy.
Oh, nice.
Speaking of Humphrey Davies, Humphrey Davies is a prominent Arabic English translator.
Okay.
He has translated 18 works from Arabic to English, including Alaa al-Aswani's The Yacoubian Building, which was in your car for like 5 years.
Yes, it was. Good book.
He also translated the novel Thebes at War by which Arabic language author? A. Elias Khoury or Khoury. B. Naguib Mahfouz. Or C. Gamal al-Ghitani.
Is that a book by al-Ghitani?
Is that your guess?
Yes.
I'm afraid you're wrong. The answer was Naguib Mahfouz. I started it with N.A. to give you a little hint.
Oh, you are so smart. And this is such a good quiz.
All right. Moving on. Question number three.
You invested. You were much more careful than I was with my bullshit.
Your bullshit tricked me on every single question.
I know, but you're breadcrumbing me here. I should just. Okay. You know what my mistake is? I'm playing the game. I'm not playing the player.
I'm not a player. I just crush a lot. So the Book of Nahum is about Nineveh, the city of Nineveh, the first half of which spells out N-I-N-E or nine.
Okay.
The 9 Years' War, also called the War of the Grand Alliance,
okay,
was a major conflict at the end of the 17th century between Louis XIV of France and a Grand Alliance, hence the name, of several other European powers. Which of the following was not part of that alliance?
This is the end of which century, sorry?
17.
Thank you.
So it's the 1690s. Which of the following was not part of the alliance against King Louis XIV of France? A, the Holy Roman Empire. B, Portugal. C, Savoy.
Was not part of the alliance against him.
Mm-hmm. Which one was not?
Okay. Let me think. Okay. So Savoy is a duchy, I think, in the southeast of France. You would expect Savoy to be allied with France unless it had some concern and it had allied itself with the Holy Roman Empire just to the east of France, of course. Portugal was another Catholic monarchy, longstanding alliance with England, but I don't know how they would be involved in that. Maybe the Holy Roman Empire would involve them to bolster their naval power, because, of course, most of Germany is landlocked.
Really seriously.
Savoy was not part of the Grand Alliance.
Incorrect. Savoy was.
Shit.
It was Portugal that was not. Portugal was just not involved in this war.
Yeah, I wouldn't. That's why I thought it would be.
But Spain was.
Yeah.
And Britain was. Spain and Britain and Savoy and the Holy Roman Empire and Austria and a bunch of other places were all part of the Grand Alliance.
Trying to contain the Great Blue Blob.
That's France?
Mm-hmm.
Is that like the Pacific Garbage Blob?
It's a lot like the Pacific Garbage Patch. Pacific Garbage Patch.
Oh, the Pacific Garbage Patch, kids.
The Pacific Garbage Patch.
Question number four. There was actually another 9 years' war.
Oh, really?
At the beginning of the 17th century.
Lay it on me.
This one in Ireland.
Okay.
In which forces led by Hugh O'Neill fought against the expansion of English rule in the province of Ulster.
Spelled the right way or the wrong way?
Spelled the wrong way, because I think mine is like an Ellis Island deal.
Okay.
So mine's probably technically the wrong way, but it's right in my mind.
Everything is right about you, my dear.
So Hugh O'Neill was fighting against the expansion of English rule in the province of Ulster, which is where my O'Neill ancestors came from.
Okay.
So he might be related to me.
That's why you have the red fist on your flag, right?
Yes, the red hand. Mm-hmm. The red hand of Ireland. Which county within Ulster was O'Neill from?
Okay. This is Hugh O'Neill.
Yes.
Okay.
This is to get revenge on you for your for your English counties in the last episode. A, Tyrone, B, Antrim, or C, Derry?
Tyrone.
Ah, you got it right!
Yeah.
How'd you know?
Guessing?
Tyrone! All right. So you've got one right, so you've already beat me.
Oh, what a relief.
But there's one more question.
Mm-hmm.
The last half of the word Nineveh is, of course, V-E-H.
Okay.
Already did the nine part. Now we're doing the
really
V.
It's not really half,
part.
But.
Would you just let me give my fucking quiz? As a soccer fan.
Okay.
You, Nico, may have heard of the German former midfielder and current manager, Armin Vey. V-E-H.
Uh-huh.
Is that how you say it?
Yeah. Well, I don't know how you say it.
Okay.
He's not famous, but.
Okay. From which Bundesliga team was he fired earlier this year?
Vey, okay.
A, VfB Stuttgart.
Mm-hmm.
B, FC Nürnberg. Or C, Eintracht Frankfurt.
I really want to say Stuttgart. I think it is. I think it's Stuttgart.
It's Frankfurt! Your final score is 1 out of 5. Super pathetic, but you still beat me.
No, oh, well, great work, baby.
Also, your fake answers were way better than my fake answers. I got to give you props for that.
No, but those were all total. I mean, those were real answers.
Yeah, that's because I used all real answers. I didn't make anything up. Like, nothing that I would make up would approach the amazingness of El Viento Rubio. I just was like, what are some other German teams?
Oh, that's very sweet, my dear.
So all that remains is to rate this book.
That's true. You know what? I've asked you many times. I'm always throwing out that first question, mm-hmm. asking you how you'd rate this book.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't, you know, I don't feel like it's fair for me to put that pressure on you every time. I think I'm going to volunteer to go first this time.
Are you like doing your lion thing right now? Like,
am I doing
the
my lion thing right
like
now?
Took over all our rights?
I don't know.
Men needs to take their rights back.
What that?
Remember when we used to do all the hunting? We hunted the mammoth. We were real lions back then.
Can I just say no?
yeah, I guess.
Okay.
What do you rate this book?
I will give this book 2 out of 5 girded up loins.
All right.
Because, you know what? That's not fair. I'm going to bump it up to 3.
Wow.
Because I haven't even given my reasons yet.
Okay.
I'm going to bump it up to 3. 3 out of 5.
All right.
Because.
Do loins come in pairs, though?
Well, traditionally, yes.
So you're like.
Well, no, they come in sets.
Do you think this is like 2.5 men's worth of loins if you give 3?
2.5 men, like Charlie Sheen,
yeah.
The kid.
Yeah, Charlie Sheen, the kid,
guy.
And the other guy, yeah.
Mm-hmm. To answer your previous question about loins, they don't actually come in twos.
Okay.
So loins is just the set, the whole conflagration down there, conflagration.
It's on fire?
I mean, if it is, definitely ask your doctor.
Definitely got to gird it.
First step, gird it up.
Okay.
Make yourself a shirt diaper and then run to your doctor.
Okay. All right. 3 out of 5 girded loins. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I like the poetry. Mm-hmm. I like the way it uses, you know, these images or like sort of fleeting glimpses of things or sounds or brief sights to set the scene of a city under siege, if I may alliterate. I also like its brevity. It's got a classic 1-2-3 punch, you mm-hmm. know, where it sets it up.
Chapter 1, chapter 2, and chapter 3.
Mm-hmm. Sets it up and then it knocks it down.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Bowling.
It's also quite brief, which I appreciate, because some of these prophecies against
foreign nations
can really drone on.
Yeah,
they do. We've read a lot of them.
Yeah.
On the other hand, not especially original. I do like that we get to see the Israelites get one over on one of their enemies.
Uh-huh. For once
and enjoy it. But it doesn't really have much of spiritual value in it.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell.
Yeah.
Except, you know, some of the same lessons that we've been taught before, and yeah, that's it.
I was actually going to give it 6 out of 10 moaning slave girls, mm-hmm. which is exactly the same as 3 out of 5 mm-hmm. for much the same reasons. I did like the poetry, but, you know, I'm not like soups interested in like, oh, this ancient city that we don't like is being militarily destroyed. It's just like not super relevant to my life.
That's true. That's true. Luckily for you.
Yeah. Well, for now, mm-hmm. we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
So that's our ratings. Our ratings are the same for pretty much the same reasons.
Yeah. We're doing great.
We're on a wavelength.
That wavelength?
Taking us straight to hell.
That's right. Let's do some listener mail.
All right. Well, first of all, I want to mention that a listener by the name of Travis has started a subreddit for the show. So if you go to, you know, like r/Sunday School Dropouts, however you're supposed to say that out loud,
mm-hmm.
reddit.com/r/Sunday School Dropouts, you will find a subreddit for the show. We do not plan to look at it because we're scared of Reddit. I'm scared of Reddit.
But also it's like that thing where like you want to throw a party, but and your parents are like, yeah, it'll be fun. You should throw a party. We'll just like help out.
Yeah,
like,
we don't want to be like chaperones.
Yeah, we're not going to. So it's yeah. like you can talk because we won't be there.
Yeah. We also have some animals to curse and or bless.
Mm-hmm.
Pet
animals.
Yeah. So our listener, Jamie, sent in a picture of his dog, Brody, whom he labels the best boy. He says he's an average-sized dog, but with the shortest legs in the world, so he's very big and also very small at the same time. This is true. He is clearly a corgi mix. Corgi mixed with, I don't know, like a probably like a Labrador Retriever or something. Mm-hmm. Corgi mixes are the most amazing dogs because they're all corgi-shaped, but then with the rest of the physical attributes of whatever the other breed is.
Mm-hmm.
We also have from listener at ByHeroes / Queers in Space, the best Twitter display name I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Two little mutts named Lily and Shasta. We got to bless these dogs.
To you, Brody, Lily, and Shasta, I say, although they have allies and are numerous, they will be cut off and pass away. Although I have afflicted you, oh, Brody, Lily, and Shasta, I will afflict you no more. Now I will break their yoke from your neck and tear your shackles away.
Nice. Our listener Becky also sent in a picture of a cat and a dog. The cat is a little tabby named Scout who is looking very evil.
Mm-hmm.
And the dog is, I don't know, some sort of poodle terrier mix, maybe.
He looking very happy.
Very happy looking. Mm-hmm. This could not be a clearer illustration of why cats need curses and dogs need blessings.
Yeah. Because he a good boy, look very good.
And she a bad cat. Mm-hmm. So to Scout, I say, I will prepare your grave, for you are vile.
Jesus.
And to Hap?
That's somebody's pet, baby.
I say, celebrate your festivals, O Hap, and fulfill your vows. No more will the wicked invade you. That's right, I'm talking about Scout. What I'm doing is I'm blessing him, so that Scout can't get at him anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I know she torments him. Cats always torment dogs.
That's true. Even though dogs might not even understand it as torment.
They just want to play.
Mm-hmm.
They're so innocent.
They're like, my friend is really bad at playing.
That looks like exactly the dynamic in these two pictures. My friend is really bad at playing.
And with that, another episode of Sunday School Dropouts comes to a close. This is the time when we tell you that you can follow us on Twitter at SunSchoolDrop.
You can follow me on Twitter at Lauren E. O'Neill. O'Neill spelled some weird Ellis Island way. O-N-E-A-L, like Shaquille spells it.
You can also find us on Facebook by looking for Sunday School Dropouts. A lot of people have been leaving us likes, and I want to say thank you for that.
A lot of people have also been leaving us reviews on iTunes, and if we get to 100 of them, we will force Nico to go on Twitter against his will. But one of our reviews did say, this is from our listener Dinah, please do not count this towards Nico's bullied Twitter quota. Twitter is the worst. And Dinah is smart. She gave us 636 out of 636 good years or years of a good man's life. And also, she said, as a marriage and family therapist, I enjoy hearing the relationship dynamic between Lauren and Nico. That's right. We are therapist approved. Mm-hmm. Our relationship is fucking rad. Officially in the law.
Rad by law.
Rad by law.
Mm-hmm. You two can be like Dinah and leave a review for us on iTunes. It's one of the best ways to help other people find the show, which is the thing that delights us most above all.
It's true.
Besides, you know, handsome dog faces.
We do like to see those smiling dogs. Mm-hmm. And if you have any dogs or cats to send to us, contact at sundayschooldropouts.lol. We will also take other emails that are not related to cats and dogs. But we won't be as happy about it maybe you could just like go on the internet and just like find a picture of a cute dog and just attach it and be like, oh, whatever, I don't know whose dog this is, but like have a good day.
Mm-hmm. Our art and logo is by Elise Carlson.
We always want to thank her. And we also thank Nico. I also thank Nico for sound engineering and editing and I don't know, all the stuff, music.
You're welcome as always. We will be back next week with more Minor Prophets, more fun.
Aren't you so excited for more Minor Prophets?
It's just nonstop bibble babble quattro.
The Ocho.
And that will do it for another episode of Sunday School Dropouts. My name is Nico.
I'm Lauren.
And we will see you on Sunday.
Yay, bye. Yay.